This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Lauren Lester, the voice of Robin and Nightwing.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review,
hosted by Cal and Liam,
streaming at DCAUReview.com
and on your favorite podcast app.
Gotham City is out of control.
An entire city screaming in fear.
Supervillains walk the streets, preying on the innocent.
They will learn the true nature of harm.
The police are powerless. A creature prowls this urban wasteland.
Who's that?
He moves in darkness. For some, he is a rumor. A name whispered in the corridors of the underworld, waiting for the chance to strike. Let every criminal know the acid taste of fear.
You crazy!
Bat! Giant bat!
Gotham has forgotten what justice means. The Dark Knight is here to remind them.
He comes.
Who are you?
Batman. Good guys wear black.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 269 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our Twitter, and still, as of recording time, our Threads account. It's Liam. Liam, we are continuing here the month of July, or at least when the original recording date happened, with our reviews of Batman the Animated Series, and we are of course going along in chronological order here, one of the orders that you can go in. It's we're not randomly picking them out, so we are continuing here in production order, I believe, right, is the order.
Correct.
We established way back on episode one. And that means our next episode in production order after last week's very exciting time out of joint review is, in fact, Catwalk. And we'll be discussing that today. It's an interesting one. It's a Paul Dini penned episode. So there's some comedy involved. But it's not just Catwoman that Batman has to deal with this week either.
That's right. It'll be a fun one to talk about. We talked about this, I think, in passing last week. Really, if you look at across the whole series, there aren't that many episodes with multiple A-list villains showing up together. So this is another fun one to talk about today with Catwalk.
Absolutely. And of course, Liam, we are going to get into breaking down our four categories and assigning a score to each of them, which will give us a total at the end and our own recommendation of whether or not we think critically you should watch this episode, and then give our thoughts on whether or not in the overall scheme of the DCAU Batman the Animated Series where this lands as far as rewatchability. But before we do that, as we do each and every episode, we are going to get the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, brought to you by, as it always is, the youtube.com/podtower channel. That's right. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today. And we would love for you to subscribe. Not only will you get some great content from our friends at the Watchtower Database who have their podcast, Jump on the Batwagon, you also get the entire catalog of Tim Talk, which covered every single episode of the DCAU They did it before we did. And then, of course, you get our entire catalog as well, all in one unique little hub there, available for streaming directly on YouTube. So if you listen to your podcast via YouTube, that is the place to be. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today and subscribe.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Catwalk, which was written by Paul Dini, directed by Boyd Kirkland, with music by Christopher Carter and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such. Catwoman is trying to go straight, but is recruited by the ventriloquist as a jewel thief.
Okay, I guess.
I mean, honestly, I don't think there's a lot... that sentence isn't structured particularly well, but also there isn't that much more to this episode, if we're honest.
Yeah, it's not one that you have to go layer deep on. It's not like Shrek. It's not an onion, that's for sure. It's kind of very surface. I guess maybe we'll talk about maybe some of the psychological angle of a tiger willing to change its stripes, or a leopard being able to change its spots, so to speak, that old adage. But nonetheless, we will discuss just how shallow. I mean, shallow sounds like that's a critique. So let's just get into it here. Let's just talk about the episode as we break down our version of the plot synopsis here. And Liam, we kick things off in a very interesting location as we have a party that is occurring, being thrown by none other than Veronica Vreeland. And we get a intro that's narrated by one Selena Kyle, who is there at the same event. And she is looking at this display of extinct animals. And I believe the tagline on the exhibition says extinction is forever. So she's sort of reminiscing and going over, thinking about what that, pondering just what that line means to her. As she flashbacks and gives us a little bit of backstory about from where we last left her, I guess, kind of, what was the last Catwoman episode that we had? It's been a while.
Almost Got Him?
I'm thinking maybe, yeah. So Almost Got Him. There wasn't a whole lot of Catwoman in that episode. Apparently, in between that time that we saw her and now, we see that she was still running about Gotham freely, purloining all kinds of valuables. She's a cat burglar. And until she was once and for all sort of stopped by Batman, taken into the police, charged, and she was sent, or I guess to avoid prison time, she was commanded to return all of her ill-gotten goods, and threatened with probation that if she violated said probation, she would go back to jail, or she would go to jail. So she needs to stay on the straight and narrow path at this point, but she's sort of talking about how difficult it is for her to maintain that path. And just as she is wrapping up her little tale of her run-in with Batman and how she ended up kind of on this current pathway, who bumps into her but none other than Bruce Wayne, who is also, as I mentioned, at the same event being thrown by Veronica. They talk about just what's going through her mind, and she mentions that she kind of feels like a fish out of water in the place there, and amongst the people that are rich and ritzy.
Selena.
Extinction. I can relate to that.
You're in a cheery mood.
Giving up Catwoman hasn't been easy, Bruce. I miss the excitement, the danger. Sometimes I feel so tempted.
Even though you'd be risking prison?
Tell me I'm not in a cage now.
Bruce Wayne, I wondered where you'd been hiding yourself. And who, may I ask, is your attractive date?
Veronica Vreeland, meet Selena Kyle.
We've met at the wildlife fundraiser last year.
Oh, of course. Love what you've done to your hair.
Thanks.
Since you're so devoted to wildlife, Selena, I can't wait to hear what you think of the museum's new conservation hall. I had it built in honor of my grandfather, Stanton Vreeland. He was the first to realize the importance of preserving rare animals.
Not surprising, considering how many of them he obliterated.
We learn just exactly what type of event it is as Veronica Vreeland shows up and begins bragging about everything on display, all of these extinct animals, and mentions that it's done in the honor of her her deceased grandfather, Stanton Vreeland, who she says had a passion for maintaining and keeping animals alive, especially those that were close to extinction. And Selena, the claws come out very early here as she reminds Veronica that actually the reason why so many animals are indeed extinct is because Stanton was a prolific hunter and enjoyed blowing things out of the way or out anything that walked into his path. And she comments that the only reason he was interested in conservation of animals was because he needed to do so in order to have something to shoot at. This is a let's just say that Veronica's feathers are a bit ruffled. And the at this point, Selena decides that she best make an exit as she truly does not feel welcome there. Bruce tries to smooth things over, but Selena mentions that she just can't seem to stop being herself. And that's kind of the theme that we'll encounter throughout. And on the way out, Selena is headed home and she hails a taxi cab. But before the taxi can grab her, a limousine cuts that taxi cab off and pulls her in. A large man gets out and shoves her into the back of the limousine. And in the shadows, we hear a pair of voices talking to her. Very familiar voices at that. And then the lights come on and it is revealed who is behind this kidnapping of Selena Kyle.
Dummy, don't keep our pretty guest in the dark.
Yes, sir, Mr. Scarface.
Ah, that's better.
You gotta be kidding.
What's she laughing at?
My fly ain't open, is it?
No, sir.
So what's the gag?
Oh, come on, you know.
What's the gag?
Can it, sister? This is Scarface you're dealing with, and I don't stand for no disrespect.
I do as he says, ma'am. Mr. Scarface can be quite insistent.
I don't think anyone's talking to you.
No, sir. No, sir.
Right. So what do you want with me?
My boys happened to be in the museum when they saw your little set-to with Miss Ronnie V. They also seen you licking your whiskers at the sight of Ronnie's pretty sparklers.
You're boring me, Log.
That's right. So as it turns out, it is not other than Scarface and the Ventriloquist making their grand return to the series here. And they have a plot that they think they can enlist Catwoman's help on. And Selena is, this is great. We'll talk about this more in voice acting, but she's just, she's so amused by the ridiculousness of this little puppet man talking like a gangster. It's a really funny interaction. I always, like we said, it's always fun seeing these Gotham Rogues Gallery interacting with each other. Reluctantly, after getting the hard sell from Scarface and about how not only would it be a way for her to get back out to the thrill of the hunt, so to speak, but it would also stick it to that very Vreeland family that she was just sort of having words with previously. So she agrees and suits back up as Catwoman and heads to the museum and enters through the skylight. Classic, cat burglar stuff here. Climbs down a giant Stegosaurus, Chekhov's giant Stegosaurus exhibit, if you will. Mm-hmm. And as she heads down and finds some jewelry, she begins to make her way into the case, but. It's at that point we cut back outside to Scarface and Rhino and the Ventriloquist. And does the other guy have a name?
Yes. What is his name?
Is it Muggsy? Is this Muggsy?
I think it is Muggsy, yeah. Or was Muggsy the rat looking?
There was three of them in the last one, and there's only two in this one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is Muggsy or...
I'll find out.
But regardless, Rhino and Scarface's other henchmen reveal at that point that this is sort of a double cross. The Catwoman doesn't necessarily figure it out right away as they begin launching flares and smoke grenades into the museum, setting off alarms. And as Catwoman tries to make her quick escape, She runs afoul of a guard, and as she's trying to escape up that same Stegosaurus from earlier, it's revealed that there's a bomb placed on it. They blow up her only exit, and the plan, obviously, at this point, is for Scarface to frame her for this theft, and she's left under the rubble of the dinosaur, which leads to maybe my favorite line in the history of Batman the Animated Series, which is, "Can you help me up from under this dinosaur? It seems to have fallen on me."
Hold it!
Oh. Could you please give me a hand? This dinosaur seems to have fallen on me.
How did you...
It's a dull story, handsome.
Tremendous, tremendously funny.
Yeah.
And Catwoman sort of smooth talks and charms the oafish security guard, and as he helps her up, she knocks him down and does manage to make her escape just barely, and eludes the cops and makes it back to her apartment, where of course Batman is waiting and needs to know exactly what's going on. Selina kind of improvises a story about how she had gone back to the museum to try to apologize to Veronica Vreeland after their argument, and she saw people were breaking in, so she decided to put on the Catwoman suit to try to play hero and win some points from the cops. And Batman's not so sure that he believes that story, but he says that he will allow her to come back with him to the museum, and they'll tell her story to the cops together, and he'll sort of vouch for her. And as we set up here, our beginning of our third act here, as Catwoman and Batman return, we see that guard that Catwoman has been knocked out has regained consciousness and is sort of telling his story to the cops as Batman and Catwoman are looking around the museum. And she notices at this point that a very rare jade tiger, the stuffed animal, this last of its kind, has gone missing from one of the displays, even though the display was brand new. And it's at that point she kind of puts it all together that she's been had, that her theft was a ruse just to give Scarface a chance to grab this extinct cat, and then obviously they were going to put the blame for all of it on her once it was found to be missing. And so she tries to break things off with Batman once again, kind of once again using his naivete, I guess you would say. He's still a little bit disarmed when it comes to her, and they have a sort of a brief fight, and she's able to escape thanks to a giant hanging whale, you know, one of those. and she escapes out, and Batman seemingly is back to square one. But at that point, he pulls out a device that seems to have a location on it, and we cut to I guess they're in a sawmill.
Mm-hmm.
Where else would Scarface be? As we come to our climax here, and we hear Scarface on the phone. He's on the phone with the Penguin, and it's actually a great gag, which the wonderful people at the DCAU Wiki referred to as a production inconsistency. But the gag is that Ventriloquist is theoretically the real person and Scarface is just the puppet, but Scarface is the one talking on the phone.
Correct.
Like, this is a gag. This is right. A visual, like, it's a funny visual gag. And we hear him selling a stuffed penguin that he also stole to the Penguin, in fact. And then he decides he's trying to offload this rare tiger, as well as Catwoman and Isis enter, and Isis makes a little too much noise and alerts Scarface and Rhino to her location.
That's right, Penguin. I got your bird just like I promised. Of course, it'll cost you extra. Hey, you don't want it? Fine. I can always use it for pillow stuffing. See there? I knew you'd be reasonable. Well, I got you on the horn. Can I interest you in a Tasmanian tiger? A steal at only $2 million. No, huh? That's okay. I got a client dying to get her paws on it.
Ah! Ah!
I thought I saw a putty tat.
And seemingly that after quickly sort of having this discussion and Selena and Scarface is making it clear they're not going to see eye to eye on this one, Rhino grabs Selena and seemingly has her dead to rights. But thankfully, that's when Batman returns. Hey, that's the name of a movie.
Also with Catwoman in it. What do you know? But yes, and so Batman swoops in to not only save Catwoman, but to start dealing with Rhino, our big bad. By the way, Muggsy is the name of the other guy. Okay. I don't believe he has a speaking role in this episode, which is why he wasn't credited, but was voiced by Joe Piscopo in the first.
That's right.
My lips. So also the third henchman, not seen in this episode, that looked very rodent like, his name was Ratso. Good callbacks there, and good DCAU callbacks for us to go there. But yeah, as we continue with our breakdown of the plot for this episode, Batman is dealing with Scarface, and that leaves Catwoman to go finally get her claws on the ventriloquist and Scarface. And well, she gets into the control room where Scarface is sitting with the ventriloquist, manages to knock Scarface off of the ventriloquist's hand, picks him up, and the ventriloquist demands that she put him down, and she complies, but not in the way that he that he probably would have liked, as she sort of treats him like a football, hurling him out of the room and landing onto the conveyor belt where she was previously strapped herself. Catwoman always finding herself on a conveyor belt heading for circular saws. Is I think that's where we last saw her too. If Almost Got Him was the last appearance by her in this series, so she was saved from that circular saw by Batman, and now saved by this from this one also. As Batman deals with Rhino, and she hurls Scarface to the words the circular saw, we see that it is almost curtains for Scarface himself, and the ventriloquist continues to beg her to stop, and she is non-compliant, and this kind of shows you just how connected and interconnected the ventriloquist and Scarface are, as we finally see some fierce emotion come out of the timid and rather meek ventriloquist, as you see his anger begin to bubble up, and he actually attacks Catwoman by swinging and hitting her with the Tasmanian tiger, hitting her right in the face with it, causing her to sort of stumble back. He's able to stop the controls at the very last second, right before the circular saw cuts the Scarface doll in half. I love also during the entire bit, Scarface is yelling for the ventriloquist to help him. So funny. The saw stops, and seemingly everyone can rest as the ventriloquist pulls out his handkerchief and begins to dab his temples. As the sweat begins to subside, all is well. But then, of course, right behind him is another lever. And that lever, just like in any good Looney Tune, unleashes a far worse death for our once thought saved puppet.
Help! Help! Someone do something! Please, let me save them.
Nah.
Dummy, please!
That's one way to remove a splinter. What's wrong, ventriloquist? Cat got your tongue.
As a Catwoman drops a release that was containing a bunch of logs and drops them right directly onto the conveyor belt below, crushing and disembodying the puppet as we see his arm fly up in the air. And it lands on whatever machinery there is, causing a small fire. And we get a horrific scream from the ventriloquist, who cannot believe just what happened. And Catwoman at that point turns her attentions towards the ventriloquist. He begs her not to to kill him, as he says that he and Scarface are two different individuals. That but Catwoman insists that since he lives inside of him, that she's going to claw until she gets to him, and begins sort of running her claws down his chest and tearing at his clothing. And that's when Batman steps in the last minute, telling her that she is unable to pursue this going forward. Otherwise, it's going to just make matters worse for her. Then Batman sort of reveals that he knew all along that he could not trust Catwoman's word. And that's why he planted a tracking device on Isis, her cat, which led Batman to the factory just in time to hear her confession that she was involved in this whole scam all along to steal jewels. And it wasn't just an innocent. She initially had claimed, as you mentioned, that she was there innocently trying to stop burglars, but she in fact was herself the burglar. And it's at this moment she mentions that Batman has a bad habit of letting her get too close, and is once again caught off guard as she scratches him, just as she did in the dream sequence at the very beginning of the flashback mm-hmm. sequence at the very beginning of the episode. And she grabs this Tasmanian tiger and tells Batman that he has a choice at this point to pursue her and to catch her, or as she hurls the Tasmanian tiger into the burning wreckage caused by the dropping of all of the logs, this priceless, last of its kind stuffed Tasmanian tiger will go the way of the dodo, I suppose, at this point. It's up to Batman. So Batman goes after the stuffed tiger. And and Catwoman escapes, and then we get sad Batman.gif
this is one of the Batman the animated series gifs comes from this episode.
It very much so. We get I guess we could have saved that for visuals, but I spoiled it. So yeah, we get the sad eyed Batman shaking his head as he realizes that Catwoman has indeed gotten away yet again. And we get a sort of a postscript as Catwoman is perched upon a gargoyle with her silhouette in front of the moon, talking and giving a final bit of dialogue for the end of the episode, saying that she is the cat who walks by herself. And that is the end of the episode. So what do you think? Where do we land on this plot-wise? It's a lot of fun. I don't think you can take.
Yeah, I think it's fun to see the two villains team up, albeit briefly. I like the confrontation. I like this as a kind of just a general character study of Catwoman as a character. And though her dual identity is not noble in the way Batman's is, it feels like there's still a kinship there in the idea of, imagine if Bruce Wayne couldn't be Batman. Like, imagine what that would do to him if he just had to go hobnob at, with Gotham socialites for the rest of his life. He'd unalive himself very quickly. Like he couldn't handle it. And the idea of her just being unable to suppress, or not wanting to suppress, that side of her and who she feels she truly is at her core, I think that's really fascinating. And of course, it being her being in some ways the other side of the coin of Bruce and his promise and his vow is I think that's kind of an interesting dynamic, and how he kind of continually gives her every chance to not go down that road, both as Bruce at the start of the episode, when he's kind of being like, hey, I can see you're on the edge, but you're going to go to jail if you do this.
Right.
And then later on, you know, in the apartment as Batman, and then in that final confrontation where there's such disappointment in him more than there is, like, he's not furious at her, he's not angry, like he sees potential in her to be a good person and someone that could help people the same way that he does, and she just doesn't see that in herself. And it's a little bit of like a tragic star-crossed lovers quality to it. And I think that's something that's been kind of covered. I think that's kind of the essential Batman Catwoman deal, right? And I think this is, other than maybe those first episodes, Cat in the Claw, where she was kind of sharing screen time with this weird terrorist plot. I feel like this is the first time in a while, obviously in a long time, that we've gotten to see that Batman, what makes that Batman Catwoman relationship so interesting, and so interesting to keep revisiting, you know, some, whatever it is, 70 or 80 years since the character was first introduced.
No, I agree with you. That, I mean, that's why that character continues to be put into those situations, why she keeps being brought back as a love interest for whatever iteration of Bruce Wayne that there is, live action, huge multi-issue comic book stories. Like it's a part of these two characters. They're intertwined in both their history, and then I think the dichotomy between the two of them, two sides of the same coin. I do like the idea of that psychological aspect of it, of you know, the sort of, as I think as the great Lady Gaga once said, they were born this way. So like, it's their natural instincts, both Batman and Catwoman. So they're both pursuing this passion, thrill, desire that they have. It's just that Batman's is the desire to right wrongs, and Catwoman's is to selfishly pursue, you know, her own betterment of her own lifestyle. So I think the curiosity that Batman has, and maybe the empathy that he has towards her for that, I love that. I don't think that would have dawned on me before you bringing it up, but it feels like we see that a lot I guess mainly the one that comes to mind is certainly the Phantasm, and that story was done, you know, that's maybe the best Batman story ever told. So I think when it comes to this, when you have somebody that's not, it's not even that they're exacting vengeance through killing, as what happens in Phantasm, it's, you know, this is purely seeking, you know, crime for personal financial gain. It's like, there's right. so many better ways that she could probably, pursue things in her life than that. So I don't know. All that to say, I think the episode is fun. Even if there isn't, I guess there's more depth to this than we initially gave it credit for, now that you mentioned it. But I guess overall, it is just a straight, you're told right at the beginning.
There's a heist and a double cross, and Batman's got to break up the skirmish,
and you don't know why the double cross happens, at least initially, so there is some mystery as to what that is, but it's brief. It is a pretty straightforward episode, and there's not a lot of things under the surface that you can kind of pick at to sort of ponder. So it is fun. It's 22 minutes. It's not an episode, I think we mentioned last week, it's an episode we had on videotape off of the Fox Kids, but I don't think we watched it very often for whatever reason. But it's fun. That I think appreciating the ventriloquist and Scarface stuff, as we have kind of grown to appreciate more through this watch of the episodes, the slapstick and the different things that they choose to do. And you mentioned it's not an inconsistency. They gave him the phone on purpose. It's funny. Like,
right.
He does the Three Stooges thing where he headbutts the ventriloquist. And if you think about it in reality, the ventriloquist is literally punching himself with the doll in that moment. Like, it's funny. It's hilarious, you know? So there's so many little things like that they did that you can appreciate. I liked it. I had fun. I enjoyed it. I think maybe a little bit more depth beyond the straight storytelling or more off the wall Paul Dini humor may have taken my score up a little bit higher, but I still settled on a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I went just 1 point higher. I went 8 out of 10. I don't really disagree with anything that you said there. I think if we had maybe delved a little deeper, Batman kind of exists to be a scold in this episode. Like, you just tell her, you know, why are you going down this path? Why are you doing this? You know, and maybe seeing more of why on the Batman side of this relationship, I think we do have enough time to delve pretty well into Selina, and we see kind of her kind of grandiose memory of how things went, where like we'll talk about it in visuals, but like when the judge is sentencing her, the judge's tower is like 15 feet in the air. Like she's kind of, it's memories mixed with like her own, you know, her own subconscious kind of, and how she feels trapped and all that. I think that's fun. It would have been fun, I think, to see more of Batman, maybe whether that's conversations with Alfred or Gordon or Selina herself, of him sort of trying to wrestle with his want and need to see her make the right decision and his disappointment when she doesn't, I think could have been a little interesting. But again, then if you put more Batman in this, then you take out some of the funnier fun bits with the ventriloquists, which I really enjoy as well. So there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff in here that I like, even if at the end of the day, maybe this is one where the sum of its parts was a little bit better than the whole, even if the whole was still pretty good.
Yeah, I concur. All right, Lane, let's move on to our next category, which of course is animation and visuals. And as you mentioned at the top, Dong Yang, rather, responsible for this week's animation, not Coco, but Dong Yang. We had directed by Boyd Kirkland. When I read, thanks to the DCAU wiki, I saw that Boyd Kirkland actually ranks this particular episode among his favorite to have worked on during his time here, Batman the Animated Series. So that says something. I mentioned to you before we started recording, before we even got into the recording room here, that the sequence with the flashback where Catwoman is talking about her quote unquote extinction, everything in that Batman scene in particular, where Batman shows up and then there's like an up close shot of his face. I told you I would bet a lot of money that part, or if not part, all of that sequence was storyboarded by Bruce Timm, because it looks a lot like a Bruce Timm drawings. Just the way Batman looks, the up close shot of his face, and kudos to the animation team for really, really adapting those Bruce Timm drawings in that sequence. Even when you get to Catwoman with, you know, kind of her big green eyes in the mask, and you know, Bruce loves to do those more exaggerated looking pinups styles, but I think even the way that Batman moves in that sequence, some of the way he moves later in the sequence with Rhino, all of that feels very much like something that Bruce Timm would have storyboarded, or at least had his hand in. But that was my thing from the get-go. Batman looks so awesome in that flashback scene, as he sort of appears out of the shadows, as he often does, and you see just his eyes, and then this burst of light comes from behind him, so you just see the rays kind of behind him, and then you get an up close shot of the Batman logo. But yeah, lots of probably fun things to mention in this to go along with the ventriloquist and Scarface gags. But what did you have as far as animation and visuals were concerned?
Yeah, definitely highlighted that opening sequence, like you said, where it feels like it's maybe part memory, part you know, dream sequence or flashback, as Selina is kind of narrating who she used to be as Catwoman and what happened to her. That sequence is a lot of fun. The sequence where she gets thrown into the limo by Rhino, and then The ventriloquist and Scarface are all in silhouette in the dark, I think is pretty fun leading up to that reveal there, I think is fun. There's nothing, it's a museum, like there's nothing like specifically spectacular, but I just like that as like a background, like the backgrounds and as a set piece and how much it's interacted with the different, you know, the whale and the dinosaur and all the different, you know, the different displays and stuff that they get to play with is just a fun, you know, that always works as a backdrop for a superhero fight. I feel like get them in a museum, that's always a lot of fun. So I enjoyed that sequence as well. And then the final bit there, one, as we talked about, the puppet always gets dismembered. And the way that I thought it was just the buzzsaw, like it had been a long time since I'd seen this episode. So in my head, it was just he got buzzsawed to death. So the fact when they stop it and then all the debris then falls on him and you just see like part of his hand tear off in the rubble.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's so funny that they found like they didn't do the most. It's such a slapstick way to a sharp right turn at the last second of where you think it's going. But of course, we're still going to destroy the puppet at the end. I enjoyed that. And then that final bit where Selena is kind of menacing the ventriloquist, I think is really good. And we'll talk about that scene probably more in voice acting in a minute, but where she's, you know, begins where the claws come out and she starts to kind of tear at his shirt and like tears are coming out of the ventriloquist's eyes and he's shaking very violently before Batman steps in. I think that's that whole last sequence in the sawmill or whatever, I think is really strong as well. So a lot of fun stuff in this episode.
Yeah. Hard to pick anything outside of that. I think the, as you mentioned, museum is always a fun place. When the Batman versus Catwoman on top of the giant whale is a fun fight between the two of them. I love it's ingrained in my head the way that the commercial break goes. We have Catwoman and Batman fighting there and she scratches at one of the cables that is holding the giant whale up. And then the you see Batman begin to drop as that side of the whale begins to drop and swing. And then you just kind of get this shot from above of Catwoman holding on to the rope and you see the whale dropping beneath her. Thought that was a great choice for direction of where to have that view from, as you see really from the rooftop down looking at this whale drop and hit. And as you had mentioned in our plots summary, the dinosaur collapsing, also her crawling up the dinosaur, also she's trying to escape, I thought was great. And then the subsequent destruction of said dinosaur. Yeah, there's a lot of great background paintings here. Almost exclusively the animals are all painted. The statue of Veronica Vreeland's grandfather is painted also. I think almost that whole scene, with the exception of Veronica and Selena and Bruce, is pretty much all painted backgrounds. I will also mention twofold here. I cannot believe this was not in either of the wikis that I looked up. Either the DCAU or Batman the Animated Series also has his own wiki, which I'm pretty sure is just copy and pasted from wiki. But neither of those places, the final shot of Catwoman sitting on top of the gargoyle with you just get the silhouette with the moon behind her, is no accident that that's been used 1,000 times as a setting for a Batman image. But Batman 89 ends in a very similar, if not exact, pose of Batman on a gargoyle with the bat signal behind him. And in this case, it's Catwoman in front of the moon. And it's also, of course, the flipped reverse shot that we get in the title card as well. So you get that same shot. Not so many times did you get whatever shot actually happens in the episode was also
true.
From time to time it did, but not often. So this is a case where you have an actual shot from the episode previewed in the actual title card. So
that's the end of Returns too, isn't it? Her in front of the moon, isn't that like the last shot of that movie?
Oh, you know what? I think you might be right. Yeah,
I think it's the back of her head, so it's not the same perspective, but it's her. It's definitely Catwoman in front of the moon.
Yeah,
there's a famous story about how that shot costs like $500,000 because they had to get a suit out of storage the last second, and it was shot like very close to when the movie was released.
And then she was never seen again. but yes, you gotta come on, DCAU Wiki, get yourself together here. This whole show happened because of Batman 89, and that's a pretty obvious homage there to that. So yeah, there's a lot of good. I do like the fight scene between Batman and Rhino. We also mentioned this right before we started recording, but we've gotten lots of shout outs, and they will continue as we go through the end of the month here. But the Skybox trading cards that were based on the Adventures of Batman and Robin, there's quite a few shots from this episode that were featured in that set, including one with Rhino swinging one of the giant tree logs at Batman, and Batman's foot connecting, and there's like this giant yellow burst that occurs, very very much in the vein of a comic book panel, mm-hmm. Yeah, I did like the fight scene between Batman and Rhino because it's more of the same. Batman getting a lot of punches. It's Batman versus a heavy bag, basically, like a walking heavy bag. He's given a lot of punches to the stomach, and then eventually he's able to outsmart Rhino and get him taken down. It's very, very good. I thought very solid all the way around. There is some fun, the slapstick with the ventriloquist and Scarface. Also adds to it, and then that final scene as Selena's kind of giving that final bit of dialogue over top of the image of her sitting alone just kind of reminds you of the sad state that she's in. So yeah, all of that I ended up giving it a solid 7 out of 10. What about you?
Yeah, and once again I was just 1 point higher at 8 out of 10. I think yeah, for all the things we talked about here, I think it's just a really fun visual episode, from the opening memory dream sequence to the stuff in the museum to that final shot of her against the moon is really great. And again, not necessarily one that I remembered from the series, so maybe iconic is an overused word in the current lexicon, but it's like, oh, that's a great shot, like that should be like that should be a poster you can buy now. Like that should, and there's a lot of art from this series that should be monetized better by Warner Brothers, but you know, it's just not. So I really love that last shot at how it mirrors the title card.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's move on to our next category, which is music. This week's music composed by DCAU legend Christopher Carter. And I gotta say, there were several points that it stuck out because we did get the recurring character themes. I think the main part that I noticed, the Catwoman theme returning, was the fight sequence between Batman and her on top of the whale. That's where it really swells and comes in. And then it's you get a slowed down version of it. And then it also is sort of played with the same pattern, but just different notes, I think, after that, as the cables begin to snap and she begins to escape. That immediately is followed up by the Shirley Walker Batman theme, as Batman kind of rides the whale as it crashes into the wall of the museum. So we do get back-to-back hero and villain themes together. We don't get any of the returning jazzy Read My Lips Scarface music, so that is absent, and that sort of makes sense. That's not a critique necessarily. That episode on its own had its own musical identity, but because we didn't really get that same thematic sound, it sort of does leave something to be wanted for the music that accompanied the appearance of Scarface, and then his dialogue later on the phone. You could have brought maybe some of that back. I'm not a musician though. I'm not where I am, but I'm not like a, I'm certainly not at the, on the level of Mr. Carter, who has far more experience and talent than I will ever have. But that's just my overall general critical thought process there. But yeah, I think the music that accompanies, of course, is Catwoman's on the conveyor belt. You build tension. Is she going to escape? That mirrors the same sort of tension that occurs with Scarface on the conveyor belt also. And then a real subtle, sad version of the Catwoman theme accompanies her little soliloquy at the end of the episode. So some decent pieces there. I didn't think there was anything one thing that really stood out other than the whale sequence. Got anything else to add that you noticed?
No, not too much else. Like there's kind of the sad. What's the opposite of of arpeggio is when it goes up, right? Or crescendo is when it goes
right.
When it kind of goes down, like the music that accompanies where Batman, when Batman grabs the tiger and saves the day, and we get so high, and then he looks back and she's gone, and the music that kind of accompanies that,
like a descending melody
realization. Yes, whatever the actual proper term for that is, someone you can tell us on the various socials.
James from Watchtower Database will probably correct this very quickly.
Probably.
He's a trained classical musician. So I'm
that's sure. Right. So. but yeah, I thought that music right at the end of that sequence was also pretty strong. But yeah, overall, I liked the music. I didn't hear anything too that really stuck out to me. Like you said, it is kind of missing that very jazzy score we had from the first Scarface episode. But perhaps that would have clashed with this is kind of a heist episode, so maybe mm-hmm. it makes more sense to bring in more of the traditional music there. I ended up settling on a 7 out of 10 for my music score.
Yeah, and I actually went with the same exact score, 7 out of 10. So we agree on that. All right, Liam, let's move on to our final category of the day, which is going to be talking about our voice cast for this week. Not a huge cast, but we do have a couple of recurring villains, as we've talked about. So a couple of returning voices and then, of course, our main cast as well with Bruce Wayne and Batman. So let's break this down and chat a little bit about this week's voice cast.
That's right. So we have just briefly, we do have Mary Lou Henner returning as Veronica Vreeland. Not a lot to her, but she does get to interact a little bit with Miss Barbeau's Catwoman at the start. Just like she's just one of those Paul Dini characters that I think he just likes, and
for sure
he just drops her in where he can find room.
I do her, like so. When she's like, I wish I could throw a party one time without some crazed whack job barging in or ruining it.
Yeah that was a funny line. She has a few little pithy lines that are great. And then elsewhere in our supporting cast, we have the late Earl Bowen as Rhino, and he doesn't get much to do in this episode, but he does have maybe my favorite line, along with my other favorite line besides the one about the dinosaur, is when George Zenza as Scarface in the ventriloquist, when Scarface says, I haven't really ever had any use for animals except for Rhino here. And Rhino is so happy, and he just goes, thanks, boss. Like, it's very wholesome. Like Mr. Bowen as Rhino is a lot of fun. Yeah, even if it's a much reduced role in this episode, but a pretty fun line. And then yes, the aforementioned George Zunza as both ventriloquist and Scarface, really good. He gets a Scarface, always kind of a very funny character. As mentioned, you kind of get the slapstick where he headbutts the ventriloquist and he's kind of browbeating him, and then you get the funny lines he throws in, another Paul Dini staple, being a Looney Tunes reference. Mm-hmm. Being he gets the I taught a putty tat line in there when Catwoman is discovered at the end there. And then I think actually what shined for me for Mr. Zunza as an actor here is that just that last little bit where Scarface is on the conveyor belt and he's yelling and pleading for his life. And then on the other side, once the doll has been destroyed, when the ventriloquist is kind of breaking down and crying and begging and telling you know, he's telling her that Scarface is another person. He's not me. And it's just sort of begging for his life. I think.
What's wrong, ventriloquist? Cat got your tongue.
Please, I never hurt you. Scarface, he's another person, not me, really.
But he's inside you somewhere. And I'm going to keep scratching until I find him.
Don't make it harder on yourself.
There's like a just the contrast there. Like it's you can tell it's the same voice actor, but how this pathetic sort of sad wretch that the ventriloquist is, especially once Scarface is gone, it just destroys him and how sort of terrified and alone he is in that moment. Like he gets to show some pretty good range here between that and kind of all of the ha-ha that he gets to do as Scarface as well.
No, you're absolutely right. I always love pointing out a person's playing two different roles. In this, he is playing the same guy, but it's a different character, kind of, sort of. So it's even more crazy that he has to differentiate. It's very, very hard to tell that they're the same voice based on his delivery pattern. I love the first introduction that we get, as we mentioned, I didn't even mention in visuals, but I love when they get into the back of the back of the limo and everything's in silhouette. So you just see, you know, kind of the line silhouette around the outside, the cell shading, you kind of get some eyes, but then they cut to the ventriloquist and Scarface and you see his eyes, you see the ventriloquist glasses. And then he, you know, Scarface says, don't keep the lady in the dark. And they turn on the dome light. And then Selena's reaction is to start laughing at him. And he looks around. He says, what's wrong? My fly ain't down, is it? I cackled. It was really, really good. And then the delivery that he has as Scarface is so great. And then it complements the visuals so well. I love that, you know, that the ventriloquist is gesturing for Scarface as he's talking. So he's moving his hands to do things and, you know, pointing or, you know, as we already mentioned, he makes him take his hat off to headbutt him, like all this stuff. It's all of that combined with like this super serious, like classic over the top, you know, 1940s gangster voice. Is so great. And then the meek, mild, you know, laid back, sort of fragile soul that is the ventriloquist kind of juxtaposed against it. It's one of the best performances that you get out of a lot of great performances in the original Batman, the animated series run. But anytime you get George Zunza in this role and in particular, an opportunity to kind of break down his performances, it's very, very impressive.
Absolutely. And then of course he has spent a lot of this episode playing off, Adrian Barbeau, of course, returning as Catwoman here. And I really think this is her best episode to date as well. Like, I just think she, like we talked about, it becomes such a character study of who she is. And yes, she gets kind of sucked in and wrapped up and betrayed and all of that. But ultimately, her need to be Catwoman and to feel the thrill of the chase and all of that is really fascinating. I think it's probably Miss Barbeau's best episode to date as well, because she just has a lot more to sink her teeth into here.
Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I mean, the last episode before Almost Got Him, which we mentioned was sort of a brief stunted appearance by Miss Barbeau. Before that, we had Tiger, which was one of our episodes of all time. Before that, we had another terrible episode, Cat Scratch Fever. So we didn't have a lot to go off of. And then prior to that was her appearance in The Cat in the Claw. So you don't have and her brief appearance in Perchance to Dream. Somebody's going to tweet that at us.
Oh, yes.
Her performance there. But as far as being Catwoman, yes, definitely her strongest episode to date. Really felt the emotion. It felt like she was really, really naturally talking about this feeling of, you know, being a fish, a big fish in a small pond, whatever, a fish out of water, you know, tiger can't change its stripes, whatever mixed metaphor you want to use for this particular character. But you could feel the emotion and this idea of her really not feeling at home, not being Catwoman and seeking the thrill of being Catwoman, but knowing for her own good that she wanted to try being on this straight and narrow path, but eventually just giving in to her, you know, to her selfish desires at that point. Really being unapologetic about it by the end of the episode. So it's a tragedy in for this particular character. As far as Batman the Animated Series tragedies, it's low on the list as far as the actual tragedies are concerned. But it is somewhat tragic in that this character just can't seem to find worth or identity in anything other than being Catwoman. So I felt like Miss Barbeau's performance, wholeheartedly agree with you, really, really strong for the episode, and really felt like her best performance to date.
Absolutely. And then, of course, the late, great Kevin Conroy as Batman. Like I said, it's really not his episode. We talked about that in the plot, that he's there at the beginning as Bruce and then, you know, has the scene in the apartment in the middle and at the museum, and then comes back at the end to kind of save the day. He hits his spots though. Like all of the interactions between him and Adrian Barbeau as Catwoman are really strong. Like I said, you really feel like them liking each other and wanting to be around each other, but being so different and so diametrically opposed as far as what their goals are, that they just it's not going to work. And his, you know, his that hint of hope that he still has, that maybe he can pull her back from the edge, and not being able to at the end there. It's, you know, not surprisingly, he's very good. But I think, yeah, this is, again, some of the best Batman Catwoman stuff we've gotten to date in this series. And that comes from, of course, Kevin and Miss Barbeau's performances together.
No, I agree with you. They have to have some sort of chemistry in order for it to be believable that the two characters on screen have chemistry. And there is a bit of that Bruce's desire for her to have a better life than just being a criminal comes across very authentically in the way that Mr. Conroy did his performance. So their natural chemistry, specifically in this episode, I felt, unsurprisingly, with it being maybe Miss Barbeau's best performance to date, their chemistry being the strongest in this episode also came through very, very authentically. So it may be their best chemistry to date. So yeah, very, very strong. Not a lot for Mr. Conroy to do for the episode, but he pulled his weight in doing what had to be done.
Absolutely.
All right, so I guess we should discuss a little bit about our scores here. Liam, for voice acting, I ended up with a pretty strong, based on the backs of all of these great performances, mainly, I would guess, on the chemistry, the aforementioned chemistry between Mr. Conroy and Miss Barbeau, and then, of course, the lion's share of the dual performances from Mr. Zunza. Ended up on a 8 out of 10 for voice acting. What about you?
Yeah, and as has been a common theme in this episode, I'm just 1 point higher at 9 out of 10. Like I said, I think there's just some fun novelty of getting George Zunza and Adrian Barbeau playing off each other, and then them both playing off Batman, and then you throw in a great a great character actor and voice actor like Earl Bowen, even in a bit part. I think it's it's just too much. There's too much good here for me to say anything other than great things about this episode.
There you go. All right, Liam, well, it is time to total up all of our scores, and totaling up my 4 scores, I end up with a 29 out of 40. What about you?
Yeah, and I end up just a couple points higher at a 32 out of 40.
All right. So as we discuss rewatchability, as we do each and every week now, where does this land as far as a must-see, maybe a one thumb up? What do you got?
Yeah, we do get Catwoman back in the series later, and she is pretty much back on the straight up villainous path when we see her again. So I guess this kind of works as a linchpin to I think it's the last episode in production order, but Batgirl Returns is I think her next appearance, unless I'm forgetting one. I think this one is at least a one thumb up for it bridging sort of the last few times we had seen Selena, she had kind of been in sort of an anti-hero, you know, going towards, you know, helping Batman role. So seeing her back to the criminal ways by the end and back on the run at the end, I think that's significant enough, even if it's not directly tied to this episode. When next we see her, it's really for the rest of the series and into the new Batman adventure, she's not really a good guy ever again. So yeah. They're at least not in the on the show, maybe in some tie-in comics, but so yeah, I think this is at least important in that way. And then it's also just a good solid episode of the series, so yeah, I think this gets a thumbs up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I give it a thumbs up. Maybe not a must watch because it doesn't it doesn't necessarily progress, or, you know, if you miss the episode, are you lost if you pick up with Batgirl Returns, which, by the way, is the next episode and her final appearance in the Batman animated series run. So, yeah, I think that because based solely on the fact that it's a good, fun episode, you give it one thumbs up. And then as far as to the integral nature of the episode, long term effectiveness, is it need, you know, do you need to watch it? Or are you going to be lost if you don't put it in the playlist? No, but still a recommendation from the both of us. If you're looking for a fun episode, maybe you haven't watched this one as much as you have other episodes, as we found, then yeah, put it in the fire it up on the streaming service, or the if you have the hard copy, put the DVD or Blu-ray in and watch it if you're looking for some fun. All right, Liam, well, that will begin to wrap us up for this week's episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget to start things off. We would love your support, and there's a myriad of ways for you to do that. The easiest ways and freest ways to do that are to follow us on social media at DCAU Review. As we talk about Twitter, Threads, still somehow still a thing, I guess, sort of. Maybe
chugging along.
Yeah, it's chugging along. I don't know how much momentum it's got, but it's there. We are, as of the recording date, still on Threads, so you can find us there. We're also
already lasted longer than Hive, so yeah, know, there's a feather in its cap.
Good point. Absolutely. It's hanging around there. We'll see if it starts to drain on Mark Zuckerberg's monetary empire yeah, we'll file that one under We'll See. But while you can follow us there at DCAU Review, Instagram, of course, we are there as well. Another Zuckerberg creation. He just makes great things that we love. And
we love big tech. We love billionaires, and we love brands on this show. We love all of those things.
We love social media companies. We love people that mine our data. We love all of those.
All of those things are good, and there's nothing wrong with it.
But in all kidding aside, it is how we get to interact with you, the listeners, in most ways. So, anytime we get to put those things that we maybe don't like so much, we're reminded of those things that we don't like about social media. For every one of those, there's the opportunity to interact with somebody that listens to the podcast, whether it's live or maybe later on after the show is dropped. Thank you all for checking in with us and for giving us your thoughts and opinions and feedback on whatever social media outlet you choose to do so. We're across the board on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads for right now. So chat us up. Let us know what you think about this episode, past episodes, DCAU news. My Adventures with Superman just came out, and a lot of people talking about that. Liam, I know not for the show, on his own time, he's got his own life, watched a couple episodes of that. So follow us on Twitter if you want to hear his thoughts on what he thought about that. And maybe later on down the road, one day we'll get to reviewing an episode or two of that in an Elseworld.
I was going to say, first rule of podcasting, always be willing to turn things you do in your free time for fun into content for your show. That is rule number one, and I am very willing to do that with my adventures with Superman. So stay tuned.
There we go. And also, of course, this is a big month, as it is, at least for the original recording date, as we have San Diego Comic-Con happening just in the next week or so. So we are eagerly anticipating all kinds of DC news, including some additional DC animation news. We're not going to speak it its name just in case we spook it, but we're hoping for a trailer for something, or a teaser for something to drop, perhaps. Maybe some news tidbits, if no trailer, that that we'll be happy to talk about here on the show. So keep your eyes glued to whatever social media. Actually, don't keep them glued there. Just check in occasionally. Not for nothing.
Bad for your health.
Not for nothing. The idiot that runs Twitter, like, not for nothing, limiting the amount of things that people scroll past, maybe not the worst thing in the world for people to have a limit of how many posts they could read per day. Just saying. Moving on, non-soapboxy, controversial takes. If you want to support the podcast in other ways, check out the show notes. There's a link to our store where you can pick up some merchandise, and there's also the link to support us monthly with a donation. Buy myself or Liam a coffee. Thank you for those that support us monthly. We love you guys. Thank you for doing so and putting your hard-earned dollars behind the podcast. It encourages Liam and I to keep doing this, even if on days where we don't feel like doing it. So thank you guys. Liam, we are continuing with one final, I believe one final, or is it, do we have two final Saturdays? This is a 5 month Saturday, it's five Saturday month. What am I talking about? But sure. Next week, at least, we have an exciting landmark episode. Speaking of San Diego Comic-Con, there's even merchandise celebrating our coverage of this episode, exclusive action figures being released by McFarlane for San Diego Comic-Con, just in honor of next week's review. And it's so big, Liam. It's so gigantic. We couldn't do it alone.
That's right. It's a big one, as you have alluded to, Cal. This year marks 30 years since the major comic book event, Batman Nightfall, which of course saw Bane break Batman's back, introduced Bane the previous year, and then in 1993 he becomes a full-fledged threat and breaks Batman's back. And one of the most famous comic panels probably ever drawn by, I believe, Graham Nolan. And just a short couple years after that event took place in the comics, a very quick turnaround, that character made its way into Batman the Animated Series in the aptly titled episode Bane. And if that weren't enough, if that great bit of a happenstance and wasn't enough of a fun reason to be reviewing Bane next week, we've also got the episode's director for that episode coming back to our show as our special guest correspondent, Kevin Altieri, friend of the show, good friend of the show, returning once again to discuss an episode he directed. He's going to pass on a lot of great tidbits of info about creating the show, how he and Bruce Timm and some of the other people working on the show felt about adapting a character that new into the show. Bruce Timm actually doing an entire act of the storyboard. There is a lot that he gets into, and we really get into the weeds with him on it. It's a lot of fun. Can't wait for y'all to hear that conversation next week.
It is going to be one for the memory books, our 270th episode, and I dare say our newest episode yet, for sure. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.
I couldn't promise it would be the best one yet because I don't know. No.